It might be steel, actually. Maybe it's steel. Power coated steel? I don't even
how
know.
Long, I mean, how long does a standing seam metal roof last?
50 years? 50, 60 years?
30 to 50.
Yeah.
So, something like that. So that's actually the answer then. There we go. We've solved it.
Why? What do you mean that's the answer?
Well, because slate tiles can last fucking hundreds of years.
Yeah, you still have to replace them, though, right? They still get cracked. Well, you still have the same issue.
Individually, yeah, but like...
Yeah.
My roof's 100 and... 100 and...
My roof's 100 and...
Welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams.
Welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams. And this week, I think we need to tackle the most important topic of the week straight off the bat, which is, you know, that shot that missed, right? So two minutes from extra time, and England are knocked out of the Euros in the final. Once again, dashing the hopes and dreams of a country. To be fair, it was a cracking save. I don't follow football enough to even know which Spanish players saved it, but it was a deflection, then a second shot, then a header away. You know, that is football. That's why they call it the beautiful game. I'm not really aware of, that's the first time since like 1996 I thought that England might actually finally win something at football, and once again my dreams were dashed and I've returned to cycling grumpily, because it's actually a sport where I understand it and I people that I follow win things. So that's been my week. How are you fellas?
What happened exactly?
Did the football drama not cross the pod?
No, this is a Euro Cup, right?
Speaking of sports ball, this is partially why we don't have news today. Rama was out watching the football last night. There's like in Australia, there's you know, different states, and there's like a grudge match of rugby league called the State of Origin, and it was the final match last night. So I believe that Rama was out watching that. So
I'm participating in a little bit of football hooliganism, presumably.
That doesn't happen in Australia. We're respectful of the streets.
Just absolute respect. There's never any kind of public disturbances in Australia. That's what I've heard.
We shuffle in a perfect line, and we shuffle out in a perfect line. We wait respectfully at the taxi stand and beat our wives when we get home.
Well, the last bit's probably true.
Go to the bar, give a two up, come home.
People don't do that anymore. All right.
They don't do it anymore.
Well, what, sure two they up? Do,
they don't play they two up.
They play two up.
Two up is... you can only play that on one day of the year.
So they do still do it.
It's literally illegal every other day, which is a bit dumb.
Is it? Why?
Yeah. I don't know. Because, like, big gamble, can't make money out of it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's weird. I mean, it's a game of chance, right? It's a game of chance. So, like, it seems like, I mean, you can't really control a two-up game. Right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you can't rig it in favor of the house. So what's the point?
But it doesn't make it legal. Oh, it's too fair. Yeah. It's too fair. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fitty-fitty, right?
It's fitty-fitty. Well, no, it's not. It's because it's two coins, as we all know.
Hence, I guess I guess they must affect the odds of the other one.
Let's not get into statistics.
Look, if we understood statistics, we wouldn't be losing money right now.
So nobody knows that Game of Nodes is live, because it looks like Twitter now requires a premium account to do live broadcasts.
Yeah,
that's what we're not on the tweet anymore. That's why we've been fucked over. There's no Twitters.
Thanks,
this is,
thanks,
Elon. Elon slowly nickel and diming Twitter. He had to make money out of it eventually, right? So
yeah, from somebody.
Yeah, Game of Nodes. Getting nickel and dimed by
He's not going to have a down cent from me.
Well, we could take it out of the Dow.
We don't have any money in the Dow.
Oh, everything's what? Coming together for us.
We must have some money in the Dow.
Everything's coming together for us.
It's all coming together.
We're being blocked out.
Coming together.
Big Cosmos Energy. Should we make the Dow an ICS trade?
Should we?
Yeah.
Maybe.
ICS it, yeah.
Like the, well, we should move it to neutral. Look, do you know what? The joking aside, the hub would be lucky to have us. If we went to the hub, then the hub would finally have a use case, something they've been searching for like 6 years, 7 years, whatever, this podcast. Mm-hmm. Delivering value every day, baby.
Every day. Most unlike consistent thing. other than Terra.de's spam Cosmos prop proposals, this is the second most consistent thing in the Cosmos.
It's ironic, isn't it, that a such a jaded podcast that doesn't even really focus on the Cosmos anymore
with no viewers
it is actually one of the longest running cultural and technical artifacts of the entire ecosystem. You know, we just, it's not much, but it's honest work, you know? That's Game of Notes in a nutshell, right?
It's not honest work. I just put a nice tweet in the, I was looking for our Game of Notes tweet because I always like retweet that, but it doesn't exist.
I got blocked out of the Twitter on my browser, so I got log out. log you out. From all of my accounts on,
you got unlogged
on Twitter. So I got unlogged.
You got unstaked. Unlogged. You got unbonded.
You got unlogged.
You got soft slashed.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah. So anyway, looking at our DAO, we actually do have 400 USDC. 200 of that belongs to Rama. So.
No. No. 150 belongs to Rama. No news this week.
No news, yeah.
Fucking all right, you get drunk and you end up at the footy or whatever the hell he is, and you sleep 2 days. You don't get
you're docked,
bucks.
Guy. You're fucking docked.
Wait. So you say that we give shit to Elon for nickel and diming?
Exactly. we hold our news researcher to a pretty high standard, to be honest.
This is just like that fucking problem. You know, like this is deep lore. Sorry, but. Do you remember when PlayStation Network was free and Xbox Live cost money and like every PlayStation owner was just like, I don't have to pay Microsoft like $20 a month or whatever to play online with my friends. PlayStation's the best. And then of course the next version of PlayStation that came out, they were like, introducing, you paid for the same thing that used to be free. And you're like, fuck. Yeah.
That's how they get you. That's how they build these platforms. They free you up, and then they just fucking backhand you with the subscription.
They just go, bam, now you need to pay me. Even fucking, you know what's like, so you know, like last year I was painting model tanks to deal with a nervous breakdown, as is my habit. Right. Okay, so joking aside, like I've obviously got into playing Team Yankee. It's great. It's cool. Don't at me. It's one of the few things in life, right, where you buy some model tanks, you build them, you paint them, and you play a ball. You play a game on the kitchen table, right? There's no subscription. You just need a couple of mates and some beers. I guess you need a subscription to buy some beers, right? But you can buy them from the supermarket. You don't need a subscription. It's amazing. It's refreshing. Love it. Okay. Made the mistake of taking a delivery from my parents' loft of a bunch of my Warhammer when I was 9 years old. Mm-hmm. Spent some time converting some of it to be valid for one of the Games Workshop game systems and got in playing that as well. That shit literally has a release fucking cycle for it. And it's not like a subscription, but like you have to pay attention because the rules go fucking out of date every quarter. Because they're like, oh, there was a tournament, and these tournaments are fucking huge. They're like 256 players. Where they'll be like, oh, at the Tacoma Open tournament, and you're like, where is Tacoma anyway? That was a joke. They're like, oh, one of the factions was really unbalanced, so we've literally changed the fucking rule book. And you're like, look, this isn't iTunes, which I know they actually deleted a while ago. Whatever, This isn't iTunes. I don't need you to update my faction. Just play the game. Wow, whatever. Anyway, just want to play, push some toy soldiers around a table. I don't need a fucking software update. What's wrong with you people?
Speaking of that, we should do a subscription for Gaming Nodes.
Patreon.
I mean, clearly it worked.
We should start a Patreon just to complete, because this
delegation thing.
This is performance art. We should have a Patreon, right?
This delegation thing is not doing it. Yeah, exactly.
and of course, a big shout out to our Patreons, without whom, and without a hefty amount of shit coins cashed out in 2021, exactly, we would not be here today.
I know.
So if you guys at home think that we should have a Patreon, just comment in the comments below. And
don't comment in the comments below, actually. If you comment, then we know that you won't want it. But if you don't
comment, we know that you're alive.
You're down for it.
Have we ever had a comment on a video?
Yeah, we get a bunch.
Yeah.
Not a bunch. We are a couple hundred, 120 episodes. So, I mean, the live stuff never counts, right? It's just like other ones. But we do get, every once in a while, we get people saying like, thank you, or nice, or this or that. Or,
hey, man, what is this shit?
But we never asked to subscribe. If you're not subscribed to this podcast, you should subscribe. See, okay, I did it.
We're almost 100,000 subscribers now. So we're going to be doing a sticker giveaway at 100,000. So, you know, to help us get there, just make sure you subscribe, pass it around to your friends. We're only 999,000 away. So
pass it around. We got a clock. We got a countdown clock somewhere. We're doing it.
I mean,
yeah, it's like at 100,000 still.
Oh, man.
I mean, like, I think there has been enough of a broad range of fucking topics discussed on this over 120 plus episodes with a broad enough reading list. I think if we continue at this rate in another 300 episodes, we'll be at a point where, you know, all those like investment podcasts where they're like, this podcast will make you rich and stuff. And like, obviously not going to, because they just say, they basically spend 200 episodes going like, do Boggleheads, but first, and you're like, okay, cool, do Boggleheads. Okay, that's an investment strategy. But I need money to invest first. And they're like, I'm out. They're like, get a good job, nerd. It's a skill issue. And you're like, okay. So that didn't help me, you know, at all. But, you know, between the reading list and like the watching in real time our own, you know, business mistakes, I just realized my headphones aren't even plugged in. Good one, Frey. Maybe you could like learn from our mistakes and actually get rich yourself, or like start a business, or just start, you need to get rich. Just start a small successful business, like a coffee shop, you know, live Schultz's dream, start a coffee shop, an organic.
Do people make money out of coffee shops? Or?
I think so. Yeah.
I think so. if you run it well and you have a plan for it and a, you know,
enough regulars.
Yeah. Like, I think a lot of it will hinge not necessarily on the coffee, but on other stuff. Like, you see a lot of people, you see like good bakeries, you know, where they do good coffee and they also bake bread. You know, those can do well. Mm-hmm. I think
I don't think our podcast is about people making money. I think we've kind of focused on helping them avoid losing money,
which, you know, that's half the battle,
right? Like, there's no alpha on this channel. It's all, it's the exact opposite. It's like, what the fuck is this shit?
I don't even understand where people get off on the whole alpha thing. There's so many people just be like, oh my God, there's going to be so much sick alpha. There's going to be sick alpha. There's going to be sick alpha. And it's like,
got to be the first. That's literally, got to be the first.
Yeah, that's just like not how. Well, oh, fuck.
The thing is, I wonder how many like hardcore alpha seekers there are out there, but then like receive the alpha and then proceed to do absolutely fucking nothing with it.
What do you mean by do nothing?
I guess it depends on the market, because actually, like, as much as I'm like, nobody actually does anything with the alpha is actually garbage. Then again, if you had accidentally got a Juno airdrop, accidentally got the Netter airdrop, and just cashed that shit out, just gone, bam, your alpha would have been. And just walk away, never check the price again, just sell it, walk away, do an artifact, just be like,
I forgot about Netta.
Hands up if you actually sold your Netta when it,
I think it was, dropped. I had a small number too, but it was still worth like, I think it was like 40 or 50,000. And yeah, I never did anything with it. I think it was like 40 or 50 grand. I was like, nah, this is going to be more.
Mine was 50 grand. It's still sitting there.
Yeah,
it's like $3 there.
I don't even know where it is.
Yeah,
I'm kind of impressed. It's $3.
Exactly.
Like, it was.
And then what was the Dex one? The wind. I was like, oh, that's nice. I'll hold on to that.
Yeah.
And there was like another one, but the Dex before that, I'm like, oh, that's good. I'll hold on to that.
Nah. That's right, because that was the one where I think I staked something for like, it was like 2 years. Wasn't there like a 2 year option? You could put something into a pool or like something that was like a
fucking like 5 years or something.
There were some options.
Scammed.
Yeah.
Is it like they launched that and walked? There's so much shit on Juno, which was okay, and then they just launched it with a good idea, and then fucking turned around and walked away. And it's going fucking there you go. That's the problem with this. Is the problem with grants, because
I see very grants, I feel very seen, by the way.
grants don't come from a place of enthusiasm, right? Grants come, you know, products out of grants don't come from a place of enthusiasm. They come from a place of opportunistic fucking grab some cash, do a minimum viable product, push it out, get the, you know, hit the milestones, get the cash. And then there is no obligation after that. But if your heart's not in it, it's always going to be a fucking turd, or it's never going to survive or succeed, because you do it and then you go, well, I got my money, so I'll see you later. thanks, community pool. And then, that's it. But if you don't get anything for it when you're building your product, they're the ones that do much better. You're in there grinding, you're doing it all for free. You have to make money out of it at some point. So I feel like they're the products that have a better chance of surviving. Passion projects that turn into money rather than money producing turds.
Well,
yeah. I mean,
yeah, we know you're guilty, the Frey, of producing a turd.
Hey, look, okay. So your thesis is correct in that
everybody makes them, man. Everyone makes turds. I do one every day.
Well, the name service was something where it was noddy as fuck, but it was kind of vaguely interesting to just knock out over the course of 3 weeks around the day job. And genuinely, like, was kind of interested in just getting it shipped. And then and then Howl took a lot longer and yada, 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 and fucking died, and we died with it. So maybe there's a little, but that's also timing. That's also timing.
Well, I mean, Howl died because Juno died.
Well, yes, also.
If Juno was still at $20 a share, like, you would have been, like, there would have been a lot more significant amount of development going on and marketing.
Do not say right? Like, share.
Did I say share? I did. Sorry. That's funny. But those things are, I mean, that's one of the issues of building on a platform is that your economics are obviously tied to that platform.
Yeah.
Right. And so things that are outside of your control.
Cough, 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 ICS, cough, 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 ICS.
ICS. Those, I mean, they all 100% have impact on whatever you're building and the future of that. Right. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And by the time you use ICS, like, just fucking go build on ETH. Literally, what the fuck are you even doing in Cosmos? Don't bother.
But the gas fees.
Using L2. But the gas fees. You're using L2.
Man, the gas fees on ETH are like fuck all. Like
right now they're 30
cents for a fucking transaction.
That's because it's over. It's over. It's over. We were late.
We're late.
It's over, baby.
We're early. What if we're late? What if we're actually late? Or what if that's the real tragedy?
Lil D says Juno's basically a mass grifter graveyard. Yeah, I think it's probably about graveyard. Right.
That's amazing.
That is a sensational alliteration as well.
GG.
But this week we've had a little bit of price, a little uplift. Stays up 7%. Aptos up 17% this week. Cosmos.
Not gonna lie, I am fully divested from Juno at ATL.
speaking of
making sales,
yeah,
so we just had the end of financial year in Australia, which is the tax year. It ends in June 30, at which point you become liable to the government for the monies, right? So we've spoken before about I do my tax a little funky. It's well within the law. And they've actually, the tax department has given advice on that stuff recently. Like they've changed some things on their website, which now reflects that the way I do my tax is actually legal. Thank you, ATO.
Did they, did they call you out specifically?
Yeah, no. They said, this fucking guy's made it so confusing. We have to follow his method because we don't know what the fuck's going on.
There's a slash kingdoms.html page up there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Tax slash business slash kingdoms.
This fucking guy. Not HTML. So are you saying that the way that you perceived the tax rule in Australia related to these assets, and that you interviewed and fired thousands of Australian tax officers, accountants, until you found one that met your viewpoint of it, you were ultimately proven correct because the official website for Australian taxes outlined exactly what you believe?
Yeah, I talked to a tax barrister, like, which is a tax lawyer.
Yeah.
In the Big Smoke in Sydney, I went down to the Big City and talked to the tax barrister, and he's like,
pull up on like a horse and shit. Like, hey,
he's like, yeah, it seems legit. Yeah, do that. And I'm like,
do that.
I don't think you would get in trouble if you were trying to be in the spirit of paying the goddamn tax. Like, I don't think the government's going to come down and go, hey man, you done fucked this up. But I see you've paid a shitload of tax.
Right.
Like, we might just have to go back and, you know, figure this out and give you a little fine of 100 grand.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Like, they, unless you're being extremely malicious, usually they understand that it's confusing and there's a rule associated to that. And it's a lot of it is usually based on interpretation and some of these types of things, right?
And honestly, they probably wouldn't fine you if you went, not necessarily. Like if you proved that you were like trying to be legit and pay tax, and you've paid tax, just maybe, you know, used a method that they don't think is right, then you would like have a meeting. You'd have several meetings with them. You'd talk it out. You'd hug it out. And then, I don't think they'd fine you though. They'd just go, well, you're going to have to do some work here.
If you had a long-term consistent accounting methodology, that would help you.
Yeah, like we've been doing it for years now. But if I went back, you know, in my head, I'm doing the calculations because I'm Rain Man. And if we went back now and redid it in like the capital gains method, we would be very in front. Like the tax man's gotten a lot more money up front because of the way we do it.
Yeah, we do the same thing. Cash basis versus accrual. Yeah.
Exactly. If we went back and did like a capital gains basis, they would probably owe me a fair bit of money.
Sure.
Yeah. But it's not, you know, I would have spent that money in admin anyway. So
wait. So did you unstake your Juno at all time low, or did you sell it?
I'm divested in Juno. I have no faith in the project anymore.
Oh.
So you realized a very substantial loss, capital gains loss.
If I was doing tax on a capital gains basis, I would, yeah.
Ah, yeah.
I'm caught up. There we go. I am.
So we are
as a company. So maybe we should also find your lack of faith disturbing. I mean,
encouraging.
Encourage it. Yeah. The other one. I find your lack of faith encouraging.
The way we do tax is that if I still held them, I would be realizing the loss anyway, because the net value would have gone down over the financial year. I can put that against other gains in holdings. So it's just you basically lump the whole shit together and say that all the holdings are worth this much this year, all the holdings are worth that much next year. We'll put the difference against the balance sheet.
Like any other asset, because I've noticed that like company cars, bricks and mortar, all those sorts of things, they just wildly oscillate in price, don't they? They just lose 95% of their value.
From a business perspective, that doesn't affect your balance sheet. You have depreciation on vehicles. It's set and mandated by the government about how much you can depreciate them.
I was just making the standard joke about shitcoins there, but thank you for additional tax information.
Well, it sounded like you were misinformationing the audience, so I just wanted to clarify that.
I think the audience by this point knows that nothing I say is actual tax advice and that you should consult a professional. Anyway.
We don't. There is no tax advice coming.
What was that noise?
I found some crypto homies in Australia finally. So in my new hometown of Brisbane, there is another operator up there. I'm going to go see them in a couple of weeks. They've invited me to their office. So nice. They have an office.
They have offices. So, yeah, we're gonna, big shots.
Well, they have staff in the office as well. So that's
they do. Yeah, wow. That's a good team. We work with them on in Chainlink and a couple other things, and like they're really solid.
Yeah, they said come over to the office for a bit. So
yeah. It's Australia.
I like that already.
It checks out.
No, they said come work from the office whenever you want. And I was like, dude,
that's cool.
Extend that offer.
Yeah, that's great.
Because I don't have a Brisbane office.
just show up with a case, right? That's all you gotta do.
I just start showing up every day.
Just show up with beer. No, just show up with beer. Like, just
with my lunchbox.
It's noon.
So we removed up there now. We're in the process of acquiring furniture, and I abandoned my very pregnant partner yesterday on the same day that we had quite a few deliveries of furniture items. And the delivery man didn't unbox any of it. So, yeah, I got some very upset messages yesterday that I should have hung around to unbox everything. So, part of that furniture is now broken from a vigorous unboxing process, maybe fueled by anger. So now I need to make sure that I pack tools when I go back up there to repair the furniture.
Nice.
But yeah, that has been just a real ordeal. Moving. I don't like moving, man. I don't like, I don't like to realize all the crap that I have accumulated. I used to live out of a bag until probably 10 years ago. Like the first 30 years of my life, I had basically nothing. And now, like, just the amount of random crap that I have that is, like, completely worthless is amazing. So, packing boxes is, like, you've got a skip bin, which is a big-ass bin outside the door, and some boxes, and hopefully more stuff goes in the skip bin than the boxes. I have a question for both of you guys. What is your policy on cables?
What do you
retention
mean?
Like, what's your retention policy on cables? Like, how many of those USB micro B cables are you willing to stash at this point in time?
I have a bin of SCSI cables.
Oh my god. So
easily.
So you would still be holding on to all of the VGA. I'm looking in this thing over here. I'm seeing VGA cables.
I have fucking everything since, I don't know, fucking 30 years of shit.
Usurper doesn't just have a dad drawer. He has like a garage out the back of the house.
We talk about that stupid meme with like the guy and his son and like they need like a 2x4 with a 2x4 and like dad goes, and he runs down to this thing and he has one he's been holding on forever and he has that perfect fucking use. Every once in a while I have whipped out a cable that has been like, how the fuck do you have this? Like I needed a DVI to VGA cable, but it had the pinouts where you could actually swap because there's some sort of thing where you could actually change what DVI pins and there's DVI-I and DVI-D, so you can go back between the four. I had one. I forget somebody needed one in town. I pulled one out.
You sound so excited as you got to the climax of that story.
There was one on eBay for like $45. I'm like, I got one. You can just have it. It's fucking sitting around. But I'm not saying this is a life to live. This is not the life to live. Just fucking throw it all away, dude. Literally back to moving, we would have to burn this house to the ground because I couldn't even imagine I could not even imagine trying to go through this shit and trying to decide or whatever else. It would just be just shovel it all into a dumpster outside and then that's it, start over,
just bulldoze it,
bulldoze the whole thing. Just, I don't even want to just dump it. There's a 40-foot dumpster out front just to put it all in there.
The shit that you own ends up owning you.
Oh, is that a Fight Club reference?
That's Dalai Lama.
Mm-hmm. Is it?
Yeah, but you know, it's also nice.
I got you for a second. Although I think it is if you go back far enough, I think it is either Buddhism or it might be Jesus.
I don't think Jesus said that shit you own ends up owning you.
Like without the swearing. there's a thing apparently in one of the gospels about material possessions, and that phrasing, but it's like essentially the whatever, man. Like I'm not a Bible guy, but I gather like this came up in conversation a while ago and somebody went, oh yeah, that's like a, it's like a thing. There's like a one liner in the Bible that's basically words to that effect. And I was like, oh, okay. So Jesus is basically Tyler Durden. Gotcha. They're like, Alex, that's not the takeaway. That's not the takeaway, dude.
What would Jesus do with this bucket of VGA cables?
Yeah. I tell you what, Fight Club is a more interesting story when you go like, is this how it went down with the disciples? Like, was Meatloaf Peter?
Ugh.
Meatloaf doubted. Although I guess, you know, spoiler alert, like, pans out a bit differently, doesn't it, for Peter and for Meatloaf. Anyway, no, don't do this. This is what it looks like when you have shit that you...
I didn't want to show you what's behind
me. I have that. I can see an entire fucking bucket full of random Zigbee shit.
Dude, I have four buckets of just power bricks.
Oh.
Every fucking combination of voltage and amperage, whatever you want. You need like a 12-volt 0.2 amp? I'm sure I have one. 12-volt 4 amp? Sure.
Forget it. Don't even need to ask. It's definitely that.
Whatever you need. Round barrel connector? Let me help you out.
I tell you what. Do you know what is cool? Do you guys have one of these like for working away? You know, one of those big laptop power bricks that can actually just charge a laptop? They are so fucking cool.
What do you mean? Like a regular laptop power brick?
Well, so you know, like you can charge a phone off of like a little power
bank. Oh yeah.
But a laptop, like, it's way too much current draw. Like, it needs a natural, like, fucking, it's a battery like that. It's,
well, like, Mac. Cool. I mean, you could use a 65-watt Mac OS brick with an iPhone. Charge it up at max.
No. I mean, as in, you're in a field and you want to run a MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
This is my out of office charger for my MacBook. Just plug it into this bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the battery. This will charge my MacBook at least once, maybe twice.
I've got one that's about maybe 1.5 times that size, and it will do it. It supposedly will do it twice. But I've never stuck.
Why is your laptop so fucking hungry?
Because it's like
all that coding.
Gajillion cores. Yeah.
It's all that one.
And this is my baby. That's my wall plug one. It's just like a little. This is 100-watt. It does.
You want no? Yeah. You fucking dingo! Of course I know you could charge a laptop for a wall plug. Do you think I have a fucking Neanderthal? Well, yeah.
No, I just assumed that you were carrying around like some fucking, you know, bucket of cables for your fucking thing.
You carry around a battery brick in case you're stuck on like a a train or something and there's no wall plug anywhere and you just need to fucking juice the laptop from front to back. Right,
this thing's light as fuck as well, by the way. I take this hiking with me.
That's pretty cool.
Charges all the shit.
The one I have is fucking heavy.
So are you packing up all shit behind you? All that shit, these couches, all that shit—is that all going, or that's all staying?
Parents' basement. It's all theirs.
Is that a flower? Is that a plant growing in a bottle of Maker's Mark?
Yeah, it's a piece of bamboo I stuffed in there at some point, and it just sort of grew. So
that should.
I got too big, so I snipped some bits off it and put it in the other. a Voss bottle and a Rider's Tears bottle. I threw away a lot of empty whiskey bottles, by the way. I had a great uncle that died, and when they went and cleaned out his like house, it was just filled to the brim with like red wine bottles, just empty red wine bottles. And you know, given another 10 years in this place, I might have been in the same situation. But fucking whiskey bottles, man. There was a few whiskey bottles lying around.
Why was,
you know, they're quite pretty bottles, right? You look at them and go, oh, that's a nice
maybe we'll get another one.
Yeah, exactly. I have to get more of those and just put them on the shelf.
More of those.
Filled with shit so I can drink them.
That's right. It's pretty.
Yeah, I've tried to give up drinking before. It's I'm an alcoholic. I think I'll just stay that way. Yeah.
That's no fun.
No, I mean, not a legit alcoholic. I just really like it. My partner's like, so you're going to stop drinking while I'm pregnant? I'm like, yeah, man.
Mm-hmm.
That did not happen. So
you'll slow down after. You know,
yeah, I mean, I don't want to be a deadbeat dad, so I'll probably have to.
Because you're just up so much.
You just don't have time for it
early anymore. Days.
You're not going to have time.
Yeah,
you're not going to have a free hand or time for the next, like, ever. So, you know, you may as well just not bother anymore.
First year. after you get past that first birthday, it all
it does get it does it does get a lot easier after the first year, to be fair.
Yeah.
That is true. That'd be my review of fatherhood so far.
Yeah. I mean, they learn to walk, they learn to talk, and like all that stuff happens, right? And they end up wiping their own
ass. Although they also have the period I'm at the moment where they want to walk, but they can only walk a short distance before tumbling over. So they instead come up to you and raise up their hand to walk with you, which is very cute the first few times. When your lower back is completely fucked several weeks later and they're still doing it and they're like wanting like several hours a day of that, you're like, I'm fucked. I can't do this anymore. I literally can't. I'm going to die. I'm in searing pain. And they're like, you know, smiling up at you and you're like, I'm going to burst into tears. I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. But the sad part about that is that at one day they never ask again.
Oof.
Forever.
Oof.
Forever. They never ask again. They're too big. Right. So you got to enjoy those days because unfortunately they get older.
They're numbered.
Yeah. Oof. The number of days where you can pick somebody up and as much as it hurts, those days are not infinite. They stop. At some point, they're just too big or they just don't care. They're like, what are you doing, dude? Get off me.
What are you doing?
It's like, what?
Get the fuck off me, man.
At some point, at some point, my kids will be carrying me. That's what's going to end up happening. It starts to reverse drift for a while. Yeah.
That checks out.
Yeah, exactly. Help me into this chair. Yeah, that's the one thing is like you go through these different periods, but they all haven't. They all end. They all end.
Nothing's forever, dude.
Nothing's fucking forever.
You know You know what they say? Like at some point, you look back, the footsteps on the beach in the sand, and there was only one set of footprints. And that's because Jesus got fucking tired of your bullshit.
Slapped you alone. That's when your kids are.
So anyway, Serpa, to answer your question, the TV's going, yes. The rack,
is that a server rack? Is that a half rack?
A server rack. That's a half shorty.
I hate to say one of those.
It's not coming. It's going to the wheelie bin.
The cash will be coming.
Yeah. It's going in the it'll be probably not in the office. It'll be in this little TV nook. And the fridge is not going. And the freezer is not going. Then I'll put a match to this place as I walk out of it. Yeah,
just
sick. Light it up. Yeah. So when the ATO comes for that audit, they can,
I got a half rack. I bought a half rack like that that I had in this house for it was for 10 years or something like that. And it had wheels on it. It was totally nice, and I stuck in the spot that I actually had to take it apart slightly to get it in there because there's a small is it a utility kind of closet where there's a small door and all that kind of stuff, and I wanted to get rid of that thing because it was such a pain in the ass, like just to wheel it around. It was heavy, and I was getting rid of everything because everything's going to the cloud. I ended up just taking a fucking sawzall to it and cutting it in half trying to get out of there. I could see you doing the same thing, just cut it right down the middle.
So it is like really useless. It's good for network equipment, but that's about it. Like you can't put a server in there; it just sticks 4 inches out the back. So
oh, really? This was this was a full depth cabinet.
This one
too much.
I got this one before I really knew about how big the servers were. So I think it's like maybe 600 deep, which is no good. All my servers are like a meter. So
It's no good.
600 good, is probably for audio equipment then. It could be for audio equipment then.
It's probably like network switches
and like audio stuff. Like typically, audio ends at 400, I think, like max.
Yeah.
It's got a you know, battery backup in the bottom of it and that type of stuff. I don't know if I'll run the battery backup in the new house. I don't think I will. But my internet keeps. Last week I was talking about how good the internet was in the new place, and now it's fucking drops out like four times a day. So I need to call up my provider and tell them to pick up their socks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's the national network that's fucked or if it's the ISP. The way the internet works in Australia is the government owns like the whole network and maintains it, and then providers can, you know, they just pay a fee.
Sounds like communism.
Yeah, I mean, you can have other providers. You can go get Elon's bullshit on your roof. Actually, I just saw yesterday that Starlink is now in like electrical stores. You can buy it off the shelf. They got that new little gizmo. Yeah, because Starlink used to come in a box this fucking big, right? Enormous. And now
it's so big you had to have a ute to carry it around.
No, Frey, you did not have to have a ute. But now they're like little.
You had it in your ute though, right?
I did have it in my ute, yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
But it wasn't a requirement. But anyway, now they're quite small and portable by the looks of things. So I don't know. I don't need
when you get called out in a stereotype, and it's totally true. But it didn't have to be in my ute.
It didn't have to be in my ute. And yet
it didn't need to be, man.
Of course. And yet it was a ute. And no one was surprised.
I have a crypto question. You want to talk about that? Yeah, are we done with Game of Homes?
Game of something. Oh, Game of Homes. So I found out something today, which was that, you know, I've been like going through ethics stuff for a really minor thing on this paper that I nearly finished. There was something that I was really pleased with myself about in the paper because I haven't seen anybody express it that way yet. I was talking to somebody earlier today and they were like, oh yeah, I think the Law Society is about to put out something that clarifies all of that. And I was like, cool, yet another thing I'm late to the party on now, thanks to just not finishing this fucking paper. Anyway, so that's my life.
Nice.
Will my paper get out before the Cosmos ecosystem finally dies? My paper about the Cosmos ecosystem. What will come first? The publication of the paper or the complete death of the ecosystem? Probably my paper, to be honest. But
was there maybe another topic you could have picked?
Yeah. Certainly not money making. That's not something else.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's good.
That would be in a different ecosystem potentially. So
here's my
You had a crypto?
No, I do. I have a crypto question.
A crypto question? What is it?
I do. So we're working with a chain. It's Say that we're working with. And
we're working with the chain.
It's Say. It doesn't matter. I guess I was thinking like it mattered, but it doesn't matter. So on the EVM side, so they have both the like traditional Tendermint piece and they have some EVM, whatever it is, a WASM thing or whatever the hell they do. Right now, I think they have a gas price. So the gas price for a traditional native Tendermint, like a min gas price for the Tendermint side. And if you run an EVM transaction, it's like one Gwei or something like that. And I think Say might even refund that on the EVM side right now. So there's maybe no gas on the EVM side. So the Atlantic 2, which is their testnet, went totally apeshit today. I don't know if you can saw it now, but the block times went from 300 milliseconds to 3.5 seconds. There was maybe 1,000 transactions sitting in the mempool. And so we do some work with Particle Network. Particle is using Say testnet, and they're dumping a ton of transactions into Say into the testnet. And what we're seeing is that this is my misunderstanding of gas. So what's happening is that they're submitting it with a gas wanted, and maybe Frey, I don't know how gas wanted is calculated, but I thought it was the client dictates that, or I don't even know where the hell that comes from. But their gas wanted number, since they're getting refunds on gas, the gas wanted number is like 10 million, which is the complete block, because there's a 10 million gas limit on Say. So They're dumping transactions in the mempool. The gas wanted is 10 million. So it takes the whole block space. The gas used is like 100,000. So that when it actually goes through, there's still only one or two transactions in every block because this wanted number is fucking ridiculously high. So it uses like 1% or 4% of the actual gas space. And then all these mempool transactions back up because there's only one transaction in a freaking block. And then the mempool fills up and then the price feeder fails and all this shit goes to shit because – so I ended up having to block them. I ended up having to – because they're all at 7-core RPC and the state team asked us to block them. So my question –
So who was submitting those transactions?
It's Particle. They're doing a bunch of testing within – I don't know why they're – I don't know what those – I guess those transactions are pretty complex. And they do take a lot of time to process, which we've seen. And we've seen a huge amount of like multiple rounds in blocks as well. And so it kind of went a little bit nuts. But we've seen that the gas wanted numbers are like really high. It's like 3, 4, 10 million.
Are they deliberately trying to break things? Like
that's a good question. The question was, how does that gas wanted get calculated? Is that a client thing where so if I do a regular transaction in Kepler, is Kepler dictating the gas wanted based off the min gas price somehow? Or
so you mean the little suggested gas thing?
Well, from my understanding, there's a gas wanted and there's a gas used, right? So if it calculates a wanted, I thought that was the way I understood it is that it was doing a there was some sort of understanding or calculation around how much gas space it would take in the block. And then that was at the time of submission. And then if the gas used was over that wanted, the transaction would fail. Like it would never make it past the mempool, right?
That's not right. It is the gas wanted is just what you specify when you make the transaction. You know, when you're doing a command line, you just say gas 200,000, that's gas wanted.
Yeah.
So it's what same, it uses from its requirement.
When you configure Kepler in a front-end UI, you basically submit like the values that the user can configure while they're interacting with your app are there for the chain.
Yeah, so they're specified. Yeah, so like if you use the reference, like the referral method to get, I'm not sure if they still have it. For Kepler, it used to be, you know, you'd put all of your specifications in a JSON, and then you refer it like that. You can there was a method a
JavaScript actually method, no, it's that a it would JSON, refer to the JSON object.
Yeah. Well, whatever the object, it was you specify it, and then it goes into Kepler, and then everything's specified. So you've got that low, medium, and high gas specification in that, and if you look at the Cosmos, not directory, the Cosmos GitHub with all of the networks in it. Yeah, I can't remember what it's called.
Cosmos, isn't that Cosmos directory?
Cosmos directory is Tom's thing, but it's similar. But it's got all of, you know, the different teams maintain their network parameters. If you look in there, they specify some low, medium, and high gas amounts, but it's calculated by the app anyway, so you can change it through when you make a transaction, those gas settings that actually get used are network parameters.
But the gas wanted
is specified by whatever application is creating that transaction, that message.
Does that hold block space? It must.
I don't know if gas wanted holds blocks that.
Based on what we're seeing, it must because you can look at these blocks. You can see like there's a transaction used 100,000 gas. Let's say whatever. This is 10 to the.
It will. It will hold. Assuming it's valid, it will hold the block space to submit the transaction from the mempool. Right.
That's the question. That's what we're seeing in actuality, at least in these examples. Is
I think it would.
That there's a 10 million gas maximum per block, and we're seeing that a single transaction is going through some of these blocks where the gas wanted is 10 million, but the use is very low, and there's no other transactions, even though there might be 1,000 transactions sitting in the mempool.
So yeah, if you've
which is really weird.
Each block has
a max gas per block.
Yeah, there's max gas per block. So that's a function of that, isn't it? Is that the gas wanted is getting up
reserving.
It's getting up close enough to the max gas per block. Right?
I guess it doesn't know what gas is actual until it's in the block.
Don't think so.
So Jorge's here. Dude, perfect time. Jorge says, gas one is what you're willing to pay. A submitter specifies this. Gas used can be lower, but you will be charged based on the gas wanted value. If there's refunds, that's probably an issue. Actually, that's exactly right. So what we're seeing is like these transactions have a massive gas wanted. The gas used is very low and the mempool is fucking crazy full and not coming down. Like I had to actually cut them off. And once I cut them off, then I had the chance to slowly bring the mempool down because they were not clearing out. Like,
Where you can get into, like, I think maybe early days of DAO, this was an issue too, was that you have, if you do contracts instantiating contracts, gas can get out of hand quite quickly. And it's essentially that thing where you need to you potentially need to tune the parameters such that the chain can actually handle those instantiations and reliably. The block gas value needs to be high enough to reliably allow those things to be added via their gas wanted value so that they don't error, because otherwise a user is trying to do something that they don't know that behind the scenes there's a contract being instantiated or whatever.
Yeah. And so that makes sense. So I think that's the issue here. And the refund, so they're never being charged on the gas wanted. And so there's no charge on that structure, which means that the gas wanted calculations are just fucking all over the place. Like they're just like setting it a feast or whatever, because life doesn't matter. But what that's doing is that
it is on testnet, right?
No, it's happening on mainnet too. That's the other issue. Is like we're having a bunch of issues with my nodes are having a bunch of issues with mempools filling up, and we couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. And even after I cut the RPC node gas to zero, that cleared things out, but it was actually starting to cut things down. But even with that, we were starting to see that on my price feeder node, my price feeder was not airing out, but the number of transactions in the mempool continued to grow. And we weren't sure exactly what the hell was going on. So that might be a separate issue, essentially, instead of that. But
that might be a separate issue. I'm not sure if those two things are related.
But what we were seeing was that we are seeing a and the other thing I was seeing was that I guess there's two different gas settings. There's a gas setting for DVM side, even a minimum, and there's a gas setting for the Tendermint, like the native side. And I was seeing like really low gas transactions on the EVM side, and then our transactions coming in from a price feeder being basically they're airing out. Like there was already previous transactions in the mempool, so it would fail and a bunch of weird ass shit. So anyway, it was wacky. So they're trying to figure out what the hell to do with that. I don't know why we're a few months in. So the logical thing to me is like, why would we be refunding EVM gas transactions? That seems like the most appropriate thing. And that would solve the issue pretty quick.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of feels like you're getting DDoSed because there is the economic incentive that stops DDoSing, which is gas.
Yeah, exactly.
Not being charged. So the predictable economic outcome based on incentives is in fact taking place.
Right. So this was on mainnet, they did a couple tests, and on mainnet and on testnet, they're both, I think, refunded on both those. Mainnet was like something like 500, 600 requests a second. And of those requests, like 90% were transactions, which I don't know exactly what's going on, but that's a separate issue. And mainnet, we had a couple spikes in there as well that we saw that similar type of structure. I think that's exactly right. It's essentially a denial of service vector, right? Like that totally makes sense, because you can set the gas wanted to whatever you want, but that does have an impact because there is a max gas per block and that's still calculated even if it's refunded. So therefore, you're just fucking flooding the mempools with shit because there's no payments or anything. You just say, hey, I'm giving you one say per transaction.
So this is one of the big differences between like public permissionless blockchains and either like consortium or private blockchains, is that one of the reasons why, I mean, a lot of them do end up having a token anyway, but like one of the big reasons you can avoid having a token is because you don't have to worry about gas and Sybils in the same way. I mean, Sybils is another story actually, really, because Sybils, you actually can't really meaningfully defend against, even though people kind of make a lot of huff and puff about it. It's kind of like part of the reason that you need an endogenous token that is related to the, yeah, it's the gap, you know. So this is actually another interesting corollary of this, or at least interesting to me, a complete loser, is that I was having a conversation. My supervisor is very involved in ISO standards committees. Mm-hmm. Is a very, you know, one of those people who like, I actually think it's good because I'm quite lazy and I sort of speak in quite a general I'm not good with specifics, right? I'm a rambler. That's my thing. And it's kind of good actually when you say something like native token and then somebody is like, yes, but what do you mean by native token? And you're like, well, this, and they're like, well, we had a 3-hour conversation at the ISO thing about this, and have you considered this counterpoint, which would also fit your definition but not be correct? And you're like, ooh, that is a good one. And this is how I get nothing done on my PhD, because I end up down with these bloody rabbit holes for hours on end. But yeah, the TLDR is that defining like what we talk about all the time, like native token, is super hard. Like it's super, super hard, because it's just doesn't apply to every situation in which you might intuitively think that there's a thing that we would maybe call a native token as jargon. Gas token, I guess, exists in quite a lot of blockchains though.
Yeah.
Which I guess is the end of my point there, which is that, you know, you need gas tokens on a public permissionless blockchain, otherwise it will be DDoSed. That is how it works.
Yeah. I'm actually typing that team, because I'm going to tell them those are both good suggestions. I think Corey mentioned a max gas per transaction. I don't see that as a config in what I'm looking at, but maybe that's something that can exist. I do see like max transaction bytes and all, you know, obviously all that other kind of shit associated to that. And that would be cool. That's a really good idea. And the other one is don't refund at 100%. Like lower the refund to 20%. Like refund 25% or refund 50%.
You don't need me to write you a paper on that one. That was the reason for doing the whole thing in the first place. Yeah. Come on. That's in the Bitcoin white paper.
Yep. Cool. Anyway, that was really good. I'm glad to see this podcast is helpful.
Yeah. So I have a crypto topic as well, which is
how exciting.
I'm just trying to work out what I can reasonably. Yeah. You know, whatever, like this is a technical audience. I can just, whatever. Nobody cares. So I had an interesting conversation with somebody from the Aptos team about their consensus mechanism this week, because there's like the Shoal implementation stuff and some of the things that have happened during preview nets and like performance load tests and stuff like that. They've obviously tried a lot of different improvements to the DAG stuff and all of that, which is obviously based on, there's like a whole bunch of papers, like the DAG Rider one, and then Narwhal Tusk, what are they on now? Bullshark Jolteon, and then Bullshark Shoal, which is, so the new hotness is the Bullshark Shoal implementation, I believe.
Okay.
Citation needed. Anyway, I might have got that slightly wrong in terms of the different Byzantine fault tolerant approaches. But anyway, it's really, they basically had a really interesting conversation with them about like the actual things that they were optimizing for, because there's no slashing, right, on Aptos.
Right.
And my assumption has always been that the low number of validators plus low number of tokens issued, or comparatively low number of tokens issued.
Tokens in circulation.
So that are currently circulating, means, yeah, you're right, a large number issue to investors and whatnot, was essentially designed to make economic finality work. That is, finality only secured by economic incentives and nothing else. Not that proof of work actually under the hood is really secured by anything other than economic incentives, but that's another story. You can read the academic literature on that if you're interested. But the thing that you kind of then go is, okay, well, but if you just deployed Aptos, right, but without the VCs, without the implied market makers and all that sort of stuff, would it work in its current form without the slashing mechanic? Like, would validators just be down? Because the reason validators are up in the current mechanic is because it's still profitable to run a validator, right? Unlike the Cosmos, you know, shockingly. And the answer, I think, is no. The answer, I think, is like the thing that protects Aptos from competition, from just like forking Aptos. And the same is probably true of SWE as well, although obviously like the implementation is different, is that you actually can't deploy it and have it work without all of the additional economic infrastructure of like VC cash and market makers and yada yada, because it has to be substantially profitable enough for all nodes, including ones with a much smaller staking base, to actually be up. Or, well, no, I mean, you only need 66.7% of all voting power, so actually the smaller nodes can go hang at the end of the day. But you need, in a situation where you essentially have explicitly, you are launching with a set of partners and you're expanding a partner base initially before decentralizing further, it means that with the market makers and everything in place, you can essentially optimize for the same things that a private blockchain would optimize for.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the punchline. That's the interesting punchline about the way Aptos works at the moment and why they don't have slashing. But also, like, the way the DAG reasons about, my notebook is unfortunately not here, so I'm not going to say too much detail because I don't want to get it wrong. But the way the DAG is constructed, in a combination with the way the leader mechanism works, which is like a reputation system, it kind of eliminates one of the three steps required in Tendermint, is my understanding, which is pretty interesting as well. Because in Tendermint, you have the you have, what's it called? I want to say it's pre-vote, pre-commit, commit. Right, it's a three-stage thing, and there's a lock over each of them. And yes, you know, so effectively, there's a stage where everybody says we're ready to go. That's like in the PBFT paper. It's prepare, I think, is the name of that stage. And they kind of loosely map onto to Tendermint, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you essentially, like, the because you're gossiping. First of all, there's data gossiping happening all the time. Second of all, there's this DAG, which is either there or not. And mm-hmm. the presence of the DAG and the presence of the validators in it is implicitly that is the prepare step. And then implicitly, because the validators are in it, you essentially have that we're also ready to go. So there's a whole bunch of like really interesting things that I hadn't really thought about in terms of like how the graph based approach to the data actually does like simplify some of the finagling required to actually do the nitty-gritty of Byzantine fault tolerance. But yeah, I don't know, like, it, I'm not really sure what the point of all of that was, other than I think the DAG rider and Scholl stuff continues to be endlessly fascinating if you're into consensus systems and graphs. We should put it in the show notes. There's a good paper, there's a good, not paper, but a blog post on the Aptos engineering blog actually about the Scholl mechanism, which is actually quite digestible and readable. And there's a good section on the validator presence thing I just talked about, and it's written down in a way that's much more clear than I can explain it. So that obviously doesn't cover the economic stuff around lack of slashing.
Mm-hmm.
It's at the end, but the interesting conclusion, I think, from the Aptos team, as far as I can tell, because they are obviously doing work on incentive design for a world in which it is much more decentralized. Well, maybe decentralized isn't even the word, but like there are many more nodes in the network. but it's not clear that slashing will necessarily be the answer there either. And there's a kind of general sense that slashing hasn't necessarily worked as intended as an incentive mechanism elsewhere. And so part of the motivation for the way that they've scaled the network so far has actually been to avoid having to implement something that would be difficult to roll back on later. And slashing is difficult to deal with later, right? If you implement it, you're kind of stuck. You're stuck with probably upgrading that rather than necessarily ripping it out, starting over. So, yeah. But it's interesting, obviously, that assumption can only really hold the assumption you don't need slashing, at least in the view of those teams, kind of only holds in a situation where you're not yet in an adversarial situation, like a true adversarial situation. Like you don't have Byzantine behavior happening. You don't have large nodes with significant amounts of stake going away or not upgrading, cough every time you're waiting for a top five validator in Cosmos to actually upgrade their node. Those sorts of situations haven't happened yet. So, I mean, there's just a whole bunch of stuff there that I think is quite interesting when you reflect on like the luxury of a top 30 blockchain versus, you know, much, much smaller market cap blockchains.
Why did you even have this conversation? I thought was this related to the work you're performing and kind of in relationship to the Cosmos stuff and everything else we've been talking about? Or is it like, where did they come up out of that, or where did they come up out of?
It kind of came up because I was reading, like, I've been reading the Scholl papers and all that sort of stuff anyway, because I think like the work around Narwhal and everything is like, it's the cutting edge of practical Byzantine fault tolerance, right? And I think it's like important to kind of try and get under the hood and like understand what each of those incremental improvements has done. And like, I'm not really a detail person. Like, I'm a kind of big picture sort of person. So I find it like really, really difficult to hang on to like really, really specific details. And so it's been quite an uphill struggle. But I think also like the incentive design stuff is like very, very relevant, I think. And we've complained on this podcast over and over about like slashing and whether or not it does what's intended, and that when it goes wrong, it, you know, people just like, right, stop the blockchain, rewrite the blockchain and whatever. And that's like, the rewrite is so much more dangerous than the slash to the integrity of the network.
Sure.
Like that's, you know, I've just written a paper all about that. So where it overlaps with my work, I guess, is saying that, look, the integrity of the blockchain is more threatened by slashing being implemented wrong in some ways. Although you do need an incentive, you know, for uptime, right? Mm-hmm. And it just so happens that assuming people will be up because they will make money is not enough of an incentive, because people don't make enough money. It's the beginning of a thread of inquiry, I guess. Like, you know, what else is there? What else can you do in that space in the incentive design space rather than just the protocol space? And I think that the idea that you can encode, of how much you can actually encode implicitly in the consensus DAG is just, all that stuff is just super interesting. I don't have any big insight of like, and here's my, no, the people that wrote, that design those things are just very clever people in a way that I'm not. But I'm just continually impressed by some of the elegance in that design, I suppose, is my takeaway from beginning to understand some of that stuff a little bit more. So, and consensus systems continue to be cool. Who knew, right? They might not be making it.
They continue to be cool, so is that?
Yeah, it's been pretty cool, but it's getting cooler all the time.
Yeah.
Anyway, but like, that was cool. And also I think the other thing was it contextualized some of the work that's happened in these preview networks and whatnot, where we've been, you know, running this stuff at scale to see how it works and how it doesn't work and whatnot. You're kind of like, okay, that's cool. But I think it's also like, it's kind of interesting to see incentives being designed in such a way that, you know, it is about crash fault tolerance and it's a public permissionless blockchain, but actually like under the hood from an operational standpoint, it's treated like a consortium blockchain. And that's like, it kind of comes back to the like, well, look, our Cosmos blockchains, functionally consortium blockchains, if the top five validators are Cosmos Station, SG1,
right,
you know, whatever, like, kind of is a consortium blockchain, actually, isn't it? Right. And it's all about measures of decentralization. Like, you kind of always end up back on the same subjects, like that you, well, however you're inside, you, the way that you're protocol is designed, like it's always going to be it's just this balancing act between that and the actual incentive design mechanism when you have in the economic finality in mind, I suppose. Like I said, there's no big like aha moment from this, just like, you know, this is the stuff that I'm into right now, and I'm just like, man, yeah, really interesting to see that trade-off between CFT and BFT. I guess
doesn't matter.
Yeah,
no use cases.
Doesn't matter if we're in crypto winter again. Who cares? Like,
I don't know. Why is everything not pumping? Let me rephrase that word. Why did everything bump up a little bit for the last couple of days?
I think hasn't the German government finished selling up all their crypto?
Oh, but it wasn't the German government, right? Isn't that a misconception?
Well, someone was selling a lot, and they're done, apparently.
They were done selling Bitcoin. Is that what it was?
Yeah, there was just a couple of entities. I thought it was the German government, but whoever it was selling off some seized Bitcoin. And then there was also the Mt. Gox refunds going out. So,
oh, really?
You know, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The Mt. Gox refunds, which are like hundreds of percents more than the amounts that were stolen. So, nice. It's like the FTX too, right? They're like, yeah, you all got ripped off, but we're giving you 140% back now. Thanks, NVIDIA.
Thanks, NVIDIA.
Little bit stuff.
Thanks, NVIDIA. I'm clicking around here trying to see what's. I purchased some hard drives from a new vendor, and I'm like, have I been scammed or not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spinners? It's like,
no.
Oh, okay.
SSDs. So these are opened and used, but like they're demos, they're demo drives.
Oh yeah, sure.
So, you know, they've been like on for a day in a Google Cloud data center and
hammer the fuck out.
Yeah. Well, I don't. Yeah, who knows? They come with a. You can only do so much damage in a short period of time, but. You know, Google's the type of people who they'd plug them in. They would like click around and do a test and then be like, yeah, that's cool. Chuck them back. But yeah. I was hesitant because they come with a 3-year warranty instead of a 5-year warranty, but they are also substantially cheaper than the market rate at the moment. So, and I all of a sudden had a need for some, thanks to a mutual friend wanting some access to archives. So yeah, anyway, I pulled the trigger on them. We'll see what happens. They're apparently here tomorrow, so
nice.
Yeah, another 60 terabyte of NVMe for the big dog.
Jesus.
Yeah,
are you moving that thing? Did you move that thing to Brisbane? Are you going to move it up there?
Gonna have to, because
you're gonna have to, otherwise you're gonna be, yeah, you'll be driving 14 hours ago.
No, I won't be driving. It's a $400 return trip from Brisbane. You can rip down there in the morning and then rip back in the afternoon. So
yeah,
it's not so bad. You catch the 7 o'clock in the morning and get back at like 8 PM.
Still.
And
fucking Uber, time schedule. You can't like bring shit you want, you know, all that stuff, right? You know, it's a pain in the ass. You don't want to do that.
Yeah, they got remote hands as well. So they're okay. The remote hands that did my work last time. I had him install the server. The dude did it in like 10 minutes. He was doing pretty well.
Yeah, okay.
They charged me fuck all for that. It was pretty good. So I was quite impressed with that.
Maybe just the next one you build, just put it in Brisbane and then eventually migrate shit and move it over or do whatever.
Well, I think I'm going to have to build another one transfer the backup server.
There's always another one.
Yeah, I have to build another big dog server. But then I'll charge the spinner. I'll send the spinner backup server, the NAS.
Yeah.
And then I can restore all the archives from the NAS, spin them back up there, sync them up, and then retire the one down there. So yeah, quite the process, expensive, but save a lot of pissing around. I might even keep one down there, you know, for
Some sort of offsite thing or something. Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Put effort into a new one and then just turn that one into fuck all, whatever, right? Like something just to dump files to or to mirror to or whatever else.
I think I don't need to go so hard on the new one. I've got way too much compute. That is for sure. Way too much.
Yeah.
So could probably go, could probably even go down a generation, like back to the 7000 series Epic instead of the 9000, which would make things a bit cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good idea. It's just a matter of how many fucking drive bays.
Yeah, man. 24 NVMEs is all you need.
The two of those stacked 48s.
Yeah, the one that's down there at the moment, it's the one with the archives. It's got 12 bays of NVMe or 12. It might have 15. I think it might have 15 actually. But it's a good amount. And I think that same brand, their 2U chassis has like
24.
No, it's either 26 or 28. It's a fair few. Yeah, Mud's like, I think he's frothing on the stowage over here. It's like 60 terabyte. Holy smokes! Yeah, I already have multiples of that already. So
It goes fast, especially when you're, you know, taking snapshots of shit and doing all this kind of stuff and everything else. But
yeah, well, that server runs our Say archive, and it's after a year, 24 terabytes. So
yeah,
And then you take a snapshot of that, and then it's 48 terabytes.
Right.
And it increases by 2 terabytes a month. So, it's so the problem we have over there is that they're still on the old DB. They're on, you know, before they changed over to Say DB. Yeah. And so all of that new data is coming in the old way that just gets stored and stored and stored instead of the new Say DB, which is way more efficient. So we're hoping that eventually they get the dev time to be able to build an app that will, so there's two ways that I believe they can do it. They can have another application which will transform the database into a Say DB compatible situation, in which case would probably have to keep the old DB anyway, as a file, in case they have an issue with later on, maybe something didn't transfer over properly. It might have to be redone.
Yeah.
So there's that option, or the other option is to go back and update all of the original apps along the way with
DB
code.
Yeah, that'll never happen.
And then resync.
Yeah, that would never happen.
All the way. So,
I mean, the other thing I would. I mean, honestly, what I would probably say is to, because SayDB came across before the EVM thing, right? I would let the current one run as is, and you're gonna have less and less customers who give a shit about anything pre-EVM. And I would think most of the requests that you're gonna get are gonna be from EVM block one, which I forget what that block one number was. And if you had a SayDB node that had everything from that block height forward and like actually had an export at that block height and like creating the new Genesis at that block height and then synced from that would probably handle 99% of the requests you're going to get. And then you can let the existing one grow. And at some point I would think that, that will be like, you could probably end up turning it off and archiving it. You know what I mean? Like,
so I'll tell you something that you can't do at the moment. And that is state export
of what
on Say. You just can't do it.
Oh, you can't do a state export?
No. Every time I've tried, it dies in the iris.
Is that a RAM issue? Is it just run out of the memories?
It's not OOM. It just dies.
Just says no. Oh, that would have to be something that'd be solved. Because I think otherwise you're kind of screwed, right? Because you'd have to find a way to.
Could it be file handlers? Because it's creating a shit ton. I don't know how much it's series. I assume it's serial, probably. So maybe it wouldn't actually open that many file handles. I don't know.
This server can handle a lot. It's got a terabyte of DDR5 baby, so that's a fair bit to fill up.
Yeah.
And it's got unlimited file handlers. So, but I don't know. I've tried it a couple of times, tried it on multiple servers. I just can't make it work. So
that would be that seems like that would be worthwhile. I mean, realistically, do you really need a SADB export from block one on that network? And I would think, who gives a shit, right? Like, because there's kind of two, it's really two networks here. There's a network that exists and it's still going, don't get me wrong. But then I think most of the requests you're going to get are from EVM block one, which is whatever that was, 6 months ago already, 4 months ago.
Yeah. I mean, I can stop it and just run it as a secondary anyway, with just not syncing. Yeah.
Sure.
So,
sure.
I wish I had a snapshot of that from what are we calling it? EVM block zero.
Yeah, well, I forget what that is. Yeah.
So I'm just checking. I believe that I did get so I have a
So Rama's asking in the chat, are we going to ignore the biggest drama of the week with SailDAO, which was not only commented on by the news reviewer of this post, but arguably was created by the news researcher of this podcast. Like, once again, Rama is creating the drama in the cosmos and reporting on it. Like,
that's true.
He out there working and no one wants to talk about NVMEs. I'm just
that's true. Rama said, this proposal is a continuation of my post, of this post by Rama. that's the first thing he says.
Yeah.
So
I don't know anything
what,
about this.
What I was trying to say is,
yeah,
I have a snapshot from around about where EVM started, but not of the archive. I've just got like a node snapshot. So,
oh, okay, all right,
yeah, I don't need to do a state export. I don't even know what the fuck SailDAO is. So,
no, either.
Yeah, I no idea.
Don't.
I don't know. It's probably too late in the. In the episode to start looking it up either.
It is some sort of pissing match between Rabo Magabo and Sencom from White Whale, right? I mean, that's basically what it is.
Yeah. It's basically that thing of where they borrowed against Whale on Kajira and then got liquidated and then it just fucked everything up. But the other interesting thing is that the DAO itself is managing LP pools, I think. And then I think the two admins are the Migaloo lot and Osmosis, and Osmosis doesn't vote their shares. So a 2-2 multi-sig is essentially a 1-1 multi-sig, which is not great, I guess. That's amongst other things, but
yeah. Yeah.
A lot of people got wrecked by the Whale Osmo pool, didn't they? So when that liquidation happened. So I guess it's just that continuing.